front of me. He said, "I ain't gonna give you the money. You didn't win it fair. Now, what are you gonna do about it?" I looked into his mean eyes. I started to make some reply, but decided against it. He saw my hesitation and said, "You better get your dogs and get out of here before you get whipped." In a loud voice, Rainey said, "Bloody his nose, Reuben." I was scared. I couldn't whip Reuben. He was too big for me. I started to turn and leave when I thought of what my grandfather had told them. "You had better remember what my grandpa said," I reminded them. "He'll do just what he said he would." Reuben didn't hit me. He just grabbed me and with his brute strength threw me down on the ground. He had me on my back with my arms outspread. He had a knee on each arm. I made no effort to fight back. I was scared.
"If you say one word to your grandpa about this," Reuben said, "I'll catch you hunting some night and take my knife to you."
Looking up into his ugly face, I knew he would do just what he said. I told him to let me up and I would go and not say anything to anyone.
"Don't let him up, Reuben," Rainey said. "Beat the hell out of him, or hold him, let me do it."
Just then I heard growling and a commotion off to one side. The blue hound had finally gotten a fight out of old Dan. Turning my head sideways, I could see them standing on their hind legs, tearing and slashing at each other. The weight of the big hound pushed old Dan over. I told Reuben to let me up so we could stop the fight. He laughed.
"While my dog is whipping yours, I think I'll just work you over a little."
So saying, he jerked my cap off and started whipping me in the face with it. I heard Rainey yell, "Reuben, they're killing old Blue!" Reuben jumped up off me. I clambered up and looked over to the fight. What I saw thrilled me. Faithful little Ann, bitch though she was, had gone to the assistance of old Dan. I knew my dogs were very close to each other. Everything they did was done as a combination, but I never expected this. It is a very rare occasion for a bitch dog to fight another dog, but fight she did. I could see that little Ann's jaws were glued to the throat of the big hound. She would never loosen that deadly hold until the last breath of life was gone. Old Dan was tearing and slashing at the soft belly. I knew the destruction his long, sharp teeth were causing. Again, Rainey yelled, "Reuben, they're killing him! They're killing old Blue! Do something quick!" Reuben darted over to one side, grabbed my axe from the ground, and said in a loud voice, "I'll kill them damn hounds!" At the thought of what he was going to do with the axe, I screamed and ran for my dogs. Reuben was about 10 feet ahead of me, bent over, running with the axe held out in front of him. I knew I could never get to them in time. I was screaming, "No, Reuben, no!" I saw the small stick where it whipped up from the ground. As if it were alive, it caught between Reuben's legs. I saw him fall. I ran on by. Reaching the dogfight, I saw the big hound was almost gone. He had long since ceased fighting. His body lay stretched full length on the ground. I grabbed old Dan's collar and pulled him back. It was different with little Ann. Pull as I might, she wouldn't let go of the hound's throat. Her jaws were locked. I turned old Dan loose, and getting a straddle of little Ann, I pried her jaws apart with my hands. Old Dan had darted back in. Grabbing his collar again, I pulled them off to one side. The blue hound lay where he was. I thought perhaps he was already dead, and then I saw him move a little. Still holding my dogs by their collars, I looked back. I couldn't understand what I saw. Reuben was laying where he had fallen. His back was toward me, and his body was bent in a U shape. Rainey was standing on the other side of him, staring down. I hollered and asked Rainey, "What's the matter?" He didn't answer. He just stood as though in a trance, staring down at Reuben. I hollered again. He still didn't answer. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't turn my dogs loose. They would go for the hound again. Again I hollered at Rainey, asking him to come and help me. He neither moved nor answered. I had to do something. Looking around, my glance fell on the old barbed wire fence. I led my dogs to it. Holding onto their collars with one hand, I worked a rusty barbed wire backwards and forwards against a staple until it broke. Running the end of it under their collars, I tied them up. They made two or three lunges toward the hound, but the wire held. I walked over and stopped at Rainey's side. I again asked, "What's the matter?" He said not a word. I could see that Rainey was paralyzed with fright. His mouth and eyes were open wide, and his face was as white as chalk. I laid my hand on his shoulder. At the touch of my hand, he jumped and screamed. Still screaming, he turned and started running. I watched him until he disappeared in the darkness. Looking down at Reuben, I saw what had paralyzed Rainey. When Reuben had tripped, he had fallen on the axe. As it entered his stomach, the sharp blade had sunk to the eye of the double-bitted axe. Turning my back to the horrible sight, I closed my eyes. The muscles in my stomach knotted and jerked. A nauseating sickness spread over my body. I couldn't look at him. I heard Reuben whisper. Turning around, I knelt down by his side with my back to the axe. I couldn't understand what he was whispering. Kneeling down closer, I heard and understood. In a faint voice, he said, "Take it out of me." I hesitated. Again, he pleaded, "Please, take it out of me." Turning around, I saw his hands were curled around the protruding blade as if he himself had tried to pull it from his stomach. How I did it, I'll never know. Putting my hands over his and pressing down, I pulled the axe from the wound. The blood gushed. I felt the warm heat as it spread over my hands. Again, the sickness came over me. I stumbled to my feet and stepped back a few paces. Seeing a movement from Reuben, I thought he was going to get up. With his hands, he pushed himself halfway up. His eyes were wide open, staring straight at me. Stopping in his effort of getting up, still staring at me, his mouth opened as if to say something. Words never came. Instead, a large red bubble slowly worked its way out of his mouth and burst. He fell back to the ground. I knew he was dead. Scared, not knowing what to do, I called for Rainey. I got no answer. I called his name again and again. I could get no reply. My voice echoed in the darkness of the silent night. A cold chill ran over my body. I suppose it is natural at a time like that for a boy to think of his mother. I thought of mine. I wanted to get home. Going over to my dogs, I glanced to where the blue hound was. He was trying to get up. I was glad he wasn't dead. Picking up my lantern, I thought of my axe. I left it. I didn't care if I never saw it again. Knowing I couldn't turn my dogs loose, I broke off enough of the wire to lead them. As I passed under the branches of the bur oak tree, I looked up into the dark foliage. I could see the bright eyes of the ghost coon. Everything that had happened on this terrible night was because of his very existence, but it wasn't his fault. I also knew he was a silent witness to the horrible scene. Behind me lay the still body of a young boy. On my left, the blue tick hound lay torn and bleeding. Even after all that had happened, I could feel no hatred for the ghost coon, and was not sorry I had let him live. Arriving home, I awakened my mother and father. Starting at my grandfather's mill, I told everything that had happened. I left nothing out. My mother had started crying long before I had completed my story. Papa said nothing, just sat and listened. When I had finished, he kept staring down at the floor in deep thought. I could hear the sobbing of my mother in the silence. I walked over to her. She put her arms around me and said, "My poor little boy." Getting to his feet, Papa reached for his coat and hat. Mama asked him where he was going.
"Well, I have to go up there," he said. "I'm going to get Grandpa, for he's the only man in the country that has authority to move the body."
Looking at me, he said,
"You go across the river. Get old man Lowry, and you may as well go on up and tell the Bufords, too. Tell them to meet us at your grandfather's place."
I hurried to carry the sad message.
The following day was a nasty one. A slow, cold drizzle had set in. Feeling trapped indoors, I prowled from room to room. I couldn't understand why my father hadn't come back from the Pritchards. I sat by the window and watched the road.
Understanding my feelings, Mama said, "Billy, I wouldn't worry. He'll be back before long. It takes time for things like that."
"I know," I said, "but you would think he would have been back by now."
Time dragged slowly by. Late in the afternoon, I saw Papa coming. Our old mule was jogging along. Water was shooting out from under his feet in small squirts at every step. Papa had tied the halter rope around the mule's neck. He was sitting, humped over, with his hands jammed deep in the pockets of his patched and worn mackinaw. I felt sorry for him. He was soaking wet, tired, sleepy, and hungry. Telling Mama, "Here he is," I grabbed my jumper and cap and ran out to the gate and waited. I was going to ask him what had happened at the Pritchards, but on seeing his tired face and wet clothes, I said, "Papa, you had better go into the fire. I'll take care of the mule and do the feeding and milking."
"That would be fine," he said. After doing the chores, I hurried to the house. I couldn't wait any longer. I had to find out what had happened. Walking into the front room, I saw my father had changed clothes. He was standing in front of the fireplace, drinking coffee.
"Boy, that's bad weather, isn't it?" he said.
I said it was, and asked him about Reuben.
"We went to the old tree and got Reuben's body," Papa said. "We were on our way back to the Pritchards when we met them. They were just this side of their place. They had started to look for him. Rainey had been so dazed when he got home, they couldn't make out what he was trying to tell them, but they knew it must have been something bad. They wanted to know what had happened. I did my best to explain the accident. It hit old man Pritchard pretty hard. I felt sorry for him."
Mama asked how Mrs. Pritchard was taking it. Papa said he didn't know, as he never did get to see any of the women folks. He said they were the funniest bunch he had ever seen. Couldn't understand them. There wasn't one tear shed that he could see. All of the men had stayed out at the barn. They never had been invited in for a cup of coffee or anything. Mama asked when they were to have the funeral.
"They have their own graveyard right there on the place," Papa said. "Old man Pritchard said they would take care of everything and didn't want to bother people. He said it was too far for anyone to come, and it was bad weather, too."
Mama said she couldn't help feeling sorry for Mrs. Pritchard and wished they were more friendly. I asked Papa about Rainey.
Papa said, according to what old man Pritchard said, Rainey just couldn't seem to get over the shock. They were figuring on taking him into town to see the doctor. In a stern voice, Papa said, "Billy, I don't want you fooling around with the Pritchards any more. You have plenty of country around here, so you don't have to go there to hunt."
I said I wouldn't. I felt bad about the death of Reuben. I didn't feel like hunting and kept having bad dreams. I couldn't forget the way he had looked at me just before he died. I moped and wandered around in a daze. I wanted to do something, but didn't know what it was. I explained my feelings to my mother. She said, "Billy, I feel the same way and would like to do something to help, but I guess there's nothing we can do. There are people like the Pritchards all through the hills. They live in little worlds of their own and are all alone. They don't like to have outsiders interfere." I told my mother I had been thinking about how dangerous it was to carry an axe while hunting, and I had decided I'd save a few coon hides and get a good gun.
"Boy, I just shouldn't have mentioned getting a gun. My mother got sitting hen mad."
"You're not getting a gun," she said. "I won't have that at all. I told you a long time ago you could have one when you are 21 years old, and I mean just that. I worry enough with you out there in the hills all hours of the night running and jumping, but I couldn't stand it if I knew you had a gun with you. No, sir. You can just forget about a gun."
"Yes, Mama," I said, and sulked off to my room.
Lying on my bed, still trying to figure out what I could do to help, I glanced over to the wall. There, tied in a small bundle, was just what I needed. Some time back, my sisters had made some flowers for decoration day. They had given me a small bouquet for my room. Taking them down, I could see they had faded a little and looked rather old, but they were still pretty. I blew the dust off and straightened the crinkled petals. Putting them inside my shirt, I left the house. I hadn't gone far when I heard something behind me. It was my dogs. I tried to tell them I wasn't going hunting. I just had a little business to attend to, and if they would go back, I'd take them out that night. It was no use. They couldn't understand. Circling around through the flats, I came to the hollow above the Pritchard's place. Down below me, I could see the graveyard and the fresh mound of dirt. As quietly as I could, I started easing myself down the mountainside. Old Dan loosened a rock. The further it bounced, the louder it got. It slammed up against a post oak tree and sounded like a gunshot. I held my breath and watched the house. No one came out. I glared at old Dan. He wagged his tail, and just to show off, he sat down on his rear and started digging at a flea with his hind leg. The way his leg was thumping in the leaves, anyone could have heard it for a mile. I waited until he quit thumping before starting on. Reaching the bottom, I had about 20 yards of clearing to cross, but the grass and bushes were pretty thick. Laying down on my stomach, with my heart beating like a trip hammer, I wiggled my way to Reuben's grave. I laid the flowers on the fresh mound of earth, and then turned round and scooted for the timber. Just as we reached the mountaintop, my foot slipped, and I kicked loose a large rock. Down the side of the mountain it rolled.
This time the blue tick hound heard the noise. He came out from under the house, bawling. I heard a door slam, and Mrs. Pritchard came out. She stood, looking this way and that way. The hound ran up to the graveyard and started sniffing and bawling. Mrs. Pritchard followed him. Seeing the flowers on Reuben's grave, she picked them up and looked at them. She scolded the hound and then looked up at the hillside. I knew she couldn't see me because the timber was too thick, but I felt uncomfortable anyway. Scolding the hound again, she knelt down and arranged the flowers on the grave. Taking one more look at the hillside, she started back. Halfway to the house, I saw her reach down and gather the long cotton skirt in her hand and dab at her eyes. I felt much better after paying my respects to Reuben. Everything looked brighter, and I didn't have that funny feeling anymore. All the way home, my dogs kept running out in front of me. They would stop, turn around, and look at me. I had to smile, for I knew what they wanted. I stopped and petted them a little and told them that as soon as I got home and had my supper, we would go hunting. A few days later, on his way back from the mill, one of the Hatfield boys stopped at our place. He told me my grandfather wanted to see me. It was unusual for Grandpa to send for me, and it had me worried. I figured that he wanted to talk to me about the death of Reuben Pritchard. I always enjoyed talking to my grandpa, but I didn't want to talk about Reuben's death. Every time I thought of him, I lived the horrible tragedy all over again. After a practically sleepless night, the next morning I started for the store. I was walking along deep in thought when little Ann zipped by me. She was as happy as a young gray squirrel. She wiggled and twisted, and once she barked at me. I looked behind me. There was old Dan trotting along. He stopped when I turned around. Little Ann came up to me. I scolded them and tried to explain that I wasn't going hunting. I was just going up to the store to see what my grandpa wanted. They couldn't or didn't want to understand. I picked up a small stick and slapped my leg with it. In a deep voice, I said, "Now you go home, or I'm going to wear you out." This hurt their feelings. With their tails between their legs and trotting side by side, they started back. Every little way, they would stop and look back at me. It was too much. I couldn't stand it. I began to feel bad all over. "Well, all right," I said. "Come on, you can go. But, Dan, if there are any dogs around the store and you get in a fight, I won't take you hunting for a whole year, and I mean that," although I knew I didn't. They came running, tickled to death. Little Ann took one of her silly spells. She started nipping at the long red tail of old Dan. Not getting any reaction from him, she jumped over him. She barked at him. He wouldn't even look at her. She ran around in front of him, laid down in the trail, acting like a cat ready to spring. Stiff-legged, he walked up close to her, stopped, and showed his teeth. I laughed out loud. I knew he wouldn't bite her any more than he would bite me. He was just acting tough because he was a boy dog. After several attempts to get him to play, little Ann gave up. Together, they started sniffing around in the underbrush. As I walked up in front of the store, Grandpa hollered at me from the barn. I went over to him. Right away, he wanted to know all about Reuben's accident. He listened while I told the story over again. After I had had my say, Grandpa stood looking down at the ground. There was a deep frown on his face and a hurt look in his eyes. His quietness made me feel uneasy. He finally raised his head and looked at me. What I could see in his friendly old face tore at my heart. It seemed that there were more wrinkles than I had ever seen before. His uncombed iron-gray hair looked almost white. I noticed that his wrinkled old hand trembled as he rubbed the wire-stiff stubble on his chin. In a low voice that quivered as he talked, he said, "Billy, I'm sorry about all this, truly sorry. I can't help but feel that, in a way, it was my fault." "No, Grandpa," I said, "it wasn't your fault. It wasn't anyone's fault. It just happened, and no one could help it." "I know," he said, "but if I hadn't called Reuben's bet, nothing would have happened. I guess when a man gets old, he doesn't think straight. I shouldn't have let those boys get under my skin." "Grandpa," I said, "Reuben and Rainey could get under anybody's skin. You couldn't help that. Why, they get under everyone's skin that gets close to them." "Yes, I know," he said, "but still, I acted like a fool.
Billy, I had no idea things were going to turn out like they did, or I wouldn't have called that bet. Wanting to change the conversation, I said, Grandpa, we won that bet fair and square, but they took my money anyway. I saw the fire come back to his eyes. This made me feel better. He was more like the grandpa I loved. That's all right, he said. We'll just forget the whole thing. He stepped over and laid his hand on my shoulder. In a solemn voice, he said, We won't talk about this again. Now, I want you to forget it ever happened because it wasn't your fault. Oh, I know it's hard for a boy to ever completely forget something like that. All through your life, you'll think of it now and then, but try not to let it bother you, and don't ever feel guilty about it. It's not good for a young boy to feel that way. I nodded my head, thinking if people would just stop questioning me about Reuben's death, maybe I could forget. Grandpa said, Well, the accident wasn't the only thing I wanted to talk to you about. I've got something else, something I think will help us both forget a lot of things. The twinkle in Grandpa's eyes reminded me of what my father had said. Seems like that old man can cook up more deals than anyone in the country. I didn't care how many deals Grandpa cooked up, he was still the best grandpa in the whole wide world. What have you got? I asked.
Come over to the store, he said, and I'll show you.
On our way over, I heard him mutter, I hope this doesn't turn out like the ghost coon hunt. On entering the store, Grandpa walked to the post office department and came back with a newspaper in his hand. He spread it out on the counter. Pointing with his finger, he said in a loud voice,
Look there!
I looked. The large black letters read, Championship Coon Hunt to be held. My eyes popped open. Again, I read the words. Grandpa was chuckling. I said, Boy, if that isn't something, a championship coon hunt. Wide-eyed, I asked, Where are they having this hunt, and what does it have to do with us? Grandpa was getting excited. Off came his glasses, and out came the old red handkerchief. He blew his breath on the lens and polished them. He snorted a time or two, reared back, and almost shouted,
Do with us? Why, it has everything to do with us. All my life I've wanted to go to one of these big coon hunts. Why, I've even dreamed about it. And now the opportunity has come. Yes, sir. Now I can go.
He paused.
That is, if it's all right with you.
I was dumbfounded. I said, All right with me? Why, Grandpa, you know it's all right with me, but what have I got to do with it? Grandpa was so excited I thought he was going to burst a blood vessel. Talking excitedly, he said,
I've got it all fixed, Billy. We can enter old Dan and little Ann in this championship hunt.
I was so surprised at what Grandpa had said, I couldn't utter a word. At first I was scared, and then a wonderful feeling came over me. I felt the excitement of the big hunt as it burned its way into my body. I started breathing like I had been running for 100 miles. After several attempts, I croaked, Can just any dog be in this hunt? Grandpa almost jumped as he answered,
No, sir, not just any hound can be entered. They have to be the best, and they have to be registered, too.
He started talking with his hands. Pointing to a chair, he said,
Sit down, and I'll tell you all about it.
Grandpa calmed down a little and started talking in a serious voice. Billy, he said,
It takes some doing to have a set of dogs entered in this hunt. I've been working on this for months. I've written letters on top of letters. I've even had several good friends in town helping me. You see, I've kept a record of all the coons your dogs have caught, and believe me, that catches up there with the best of them. Now, I have already paid the entry fee, and everything is fixed. All we have to do is go.
Entry fee? How much did it cost? I asked.
You let me worry about that, he said. Now, what do you say? Want to give it a whirl? I understand the winner receives a gold cup, and you never can tell. We might come home with it. We have as good a chance as anyone else.
Grandpa had me so worked up by this time, I didn't think anyone else had any good hounds but me. I reared back and blurted, It's all right with me, Grandpa. Just tell me what to do.
Grandpa flew out of gear like a Model T Ford. He slapped the counter with his hand. In a pent-up voice, he said, That's the boy. That's the way I like to hear a coon hunter talk.
With a questioning look on his face, he asked, Didn't I see your dogs with you when you came up?
Yes, they followed me, I said. They're outside.
Well, call them in, he said. I got something for them.
I called to them. Little Ann came in the store, walking like she was scared. Old Dan came to the door and stopped. I tried to coax him in. It was no use. My dogs, never being allowed in the house, were scared to come in. Grandpa walked over to a hoop of cheese and cut off two chunks about the size of my fist. He walked to the door, talking to old Dan.
What's the matter, boy? He said. You scared to come in? Well, that shows you're a good dog.
He handed him a piece of the cheese. I heard it rattle in his throat as he gulped it down. Grandpa came back and set little Ann up on the counter. He chuckled as he broke the cheese up in small pieces and fed her.
Yes, sir, he said. I think we have the best darn coon hounds in these Ozark Mountains. And just as sure as shooting, we're going to win that gold cup.
Grandpa didn't have to say that. The way I was feeling, I already had the cup. All I had to do was go and get it.
Finished with his feeding of little Ann, Grandpa said, Now, let's see. The hunt starts on the 23rd. That's about, let's see. This is the 17th.
Counting on his fingers, he finally figured it out.
That's 6 days from now, he said in a jubilant voice.
I nodded my head.
We can leave here early in the morning on the 22nd, he said, and barring accidents, we should make the campground in plenty of time for the grand opening.
I asked how we were going.
We'll go in my buggy, he said. I'll load the tent and everything the night before.
I asked him what he wanted me to bring.
Nothing, he said, but these two little hounds. And you be here early, and I believe I'd let these dogs rest, 'cause we want them in tip-top shape when we get there.
I saw the thinking wrinkles bunch up on Grandpa's forehead.
You reckon your daddy would like to go? He asked. As late in the fall as it is, I don't think he's too busy, is he?
No, our crops are all gathered, I said. We've been clearing some of the bottom land, but that's almost done now.
Well, ask him, he said. Tell him I'd like to have him go.
I'll ask him, I said, but you know how Papa is. The farm comes first with him.
I know, Grandpa said, but you ask him anyway and tell him what I said. Now, it's getting late and you had better be heading for home.
I was almost to the door when Grandpa said,
Wait a minute.
He walked over behind the candy counter and shook out one of the quarter sacks. He filled it up to the brim, bounced it on the counter a few times, and dropped in a few more gumdrops. With a twinkle in his eye and a smile on his face, he handed it to me, saying,
I saved some for your sisters.
I was so choked up I couldn't say anything. I took it and flew out the door, calling to my dogs. On my way home, I didn't walk on the ground. I was way up in the clouds, just skipping along. With a song, I told the sycamore trees and the pop-eyed gray squirrels how happy I was. Little Ann sensed my happiness. She pranced along on the trail with a doggish grin on her face. She begged for a piece of candy, which I so gladly gave. Even old Dan felt the pleasant atmosphere. His long red tail fanned the air. Once he raised his head and bawled. I stood still and listened to the droning tones of his deep voice. The sound seemed to be trapped for an instant in the thick timber. It rolled around under the tall white sycamores, beat its way through the wild cane, and found freedom out over the clear blue waters of the river. The sound, following the river's course, rolled like the beat of a jungle drum. As the echo died away in the distance, silence settled over the bottoms. The gray squirrels stopped their chattering. The wild birds quit their singing. I stood still. No sound could be heard. It seemed that all the creatures of the wild were holding their breath. I gazed up to the towering heights of the tall trees. No leaf was stirring. The silence seemed strained and expectant, like a young boy waiting for a firecracker to explode. I looked at old Dan. He was standing perfectly still, with his right front foot raised and his long ears fanned open. He seemed to be listening and challenging any living creature to make a noise. The silence was broken by the whee of a red-tailed hawk. This seemed to be a signal. All around me, the happy atmosphere resumed its natural state. I heard the bam-bam-bam of a woodpecker high up in the top of a box elder snag. The cry of a kingfisher and the scream of a blue jay blended perfectly with a drum-like beat. A barking red squirrel glued to the side of a hackberry tree kept time to the music with the beat of his tail.
Each noise I heard and each sight I saw was very familiar to me, but I never grew tired of listening and watching. They were a God-sent gift, and I enjoyed them all. As I skipped along, it was hard for me to realize all the wonderful things that had happened to me in such a few short years. I had two of the finest little hounds that ever bawled on the trail of a ringtail coon. I had a wonderful mother and father and three little sisters. I had the best grandpa a boy ever had, and to top it all, I was going on a championship coon hunt. It was no wonder that my heart was bursting with happiness. Wasn't I the luckiest boy in the world? Everyone was just sitting down to supper when I got home. My sisters quit the table for the candy. I told them to divide it equally. The oldest one asked if I wanted any of it. "No," I said, "I brought it all for you." Of course, I didn't tell them about the four pieces I had in my pocket. They thanked me with their clear blue eyes. I guess it's pretty hard for a young boy to fool his mama. She took one look at me and called me over. She ruffled up my hair, kissed me, and said, "If my little boy's eyes get any bigger, they're going to pop right out of his head. Now tell me, what are you so happy about?" Before I could say anything, Papa chuckled and asked, "What's going on between you and your grandpa? What are you and that old man cooking up now?" As fast as I could talk, I started telling about the big coon hunt. I told how hard Grandpa had been working to have my dogs entered, and how he had already paid my entry fee. Catching my breath and looking at Papa, I said, "We're going in his buggy, and he wants you to go." I waited in silence for his reply. Papa sat there, staring off into space, sipping his coffee and saying nothing. I knew he was thinking. In the silence, I was sure I could hear my heart thumping. I said, "Papa, please go. We'll have a lot of fun, and besides, the winner receives a big golden cup." He scratched his head and said, "Billy, I'd sure like to go, but I don't see how I can with all this work around here." I was beginning to think that Papa wasn't going to go. Then Mama started talking. "Work," she said. "Why, all the work is practically done. I don't know of one thing you couldn't put off for a few days. Why don't you go? You haven't been anywhere since I don't know when."
"Well, it's not only the work I'm thinking of," Papa said. "It's you and the girls."
"Why, don't worry about the girls and me," Mama said. "We'll be all right. Besides, it'll be several months yet before I need any help." When Mama said this, it dawned on me. I had been so busy with my coon hunting, I hadn't noticed anything unusual. Mama's tummy was all swelled up. She was going to have a baby. I felt guilty for not having noticed. I went over and put my arms around her and kissed her. Papa spoke up.
"It's sure going to be a big hunt," he said. "I heard something about it up at the store one day."
"Grandpa said there'll be hunters there from everywhere," I said, "and some of the best coon hounds in the country."
"Do you think you have a chance to win the cup?" Papa asked.
I started to answer him when the little one piped up.
"They can't beat old Dan and little Ann," she said. "I just bet they can't."
Everyone laughed at her serious remark. I would have kissed her, but she had candy, cornbread, and molasses all over her face. I told Papa I didn't know how good those dogs were, but there was one thing I did know. If they beat mine, they would have to hunt harder than they ever had before. After I had had my say about the dogs, a silence settled over the dining room. Everyone was looking at Papa and waiting for his answer. I saw a pleased smile spread over his face. He stood up.
"All right, I'll go," he said, "and by golly, we'll bring that gold cup back, too."
My sisters started clapping their hands and squealing with delight. A satisfied smile spread over my mother's face. At that moment, I'm sure no boy in the world could have been happier than I. Tears of happiness rolled down my cheeks. Mama wiped them away with her apron. In the midst of all the excitement, my little sister, saying not a word, climbed down from her chair. No one said anything. We just watched her. Still clutching a spoon in her small hand, she came around the table and walked up to me. Looking down at the floor in a bashful voice, she asked, "Can I have the gold cup?" Putting my finger under her sticky little chin, I tilted her head up. I smiled as I looked into her clear blue eyes. I said, "Honey, if I win it, I'll give it to no one but you." I had to cross my heart and hope to die several times before she was satisfied.
Back in her chair, she gloated over the others.
"You just wait and see," she said. "It'll be all mine, nobody's but mine, and I'll put my banty eggs in it." "Silly, you don't put banty eggs in a gold cup," the oldest one said. "They're just made to look at."
That night I dreamed about gold cups, little red hounds, and coons as big as rain barrels. Once I woke myself up whooping to my dogs. The next few days were busy ones for me. Knowing that Papa and I would be gone for several days, I did everything I could to make things convenient for Mama. I chopped a large pile of wood and stacked it close to the kitchen door. To make it easy for her to feed our stock, I cut some poles from the hillside and boxed up one of the stalls in the barn. I filled it full of hay so she wouldn't have to climb the ladder to the loft. Papa laid down the law to my sisters about being good and helping Mama while we were gone. The day before we were to leave, I was as nervous as a June bug in a hen house. The day seemed endless. A few of the miserable hours were spent talking to my dogs. I told them all about the big hunt and how important it was. "Now, if you don't win the golden cup," I said, "I won't be mad, because I know you will do your best." Old Dan wouldn't even look at me and paid no attention to what I said. He was sulking because I hadn't been taking him hunting. When I talked to little Ann, it was different. She listened and seemed to understand everything I said. I dreaded to go to bed that night. I thought sleep would be impossible. I must have been more tired than I thought I was. I fell asleep almost immediately. Old Red, our rooster, woke me at daybreak, crowing his fool head off. It was a beautiful morning, clear and frosty. After a good breakfast, we kissed Mama goodbye and started for the store. I'm sure there were a lot of coon hunters in the Ozarks, but on that morning, none could have felt as big and important as I. Walking along by the side of my father, I threw out my chest and tried hard to keep pace with his long strides. He noticed and laughed. "You'll have to grow a little bit," he said, "before you can take steps that long." I didn't say anything, I just smiled. Hearing a noise overhead, I looked up. The gray ones were winging their way southward. I listened to their talking and wondered what they were saying. Looking to the mountains around us, I saw that the mysterious artist who comes at night had paid us a visit. I wondered how he could paint so many different colors in one night. Red, wine, yellow, and rust. My dogs were trotting along in front of us. I smiled at the way their hindquarters shifted to the right. Little Ann would jump and bounce and try to get old Dan to play, but the solemn old boy just jogged along, heedless of everything. "You know," Papa said, "she doesn't even act like a hound. She is bouncing and playing all the time. Why, she acts more like a little pup than a hound." "Yes, I know," I said. "I've noticed that myself. But you know one thing, Papa. She's the smartest dog I've ever seen. Why, some of the things she does are almost unbelievable." "Yes, I know," said Papa. "But still, it's strange, very strange." "There's only one thing wrong with her, Papa," I said. "Yeah? What's that?" he asked.
"You won't believe it," I said, "but she's gun-shy."
"Gun-shy? How do you know she's gun-shy?" Papa asked.
"I didn't know for a long time," I said, "until one day when I was hoeing corn down in the field by the old slough. She and old Dan were digging in a bank after a groundhog. Across the river, some fishermen started shooting a gun. It scared little Ann, and she came running to me, shaking all over."
"Oh," Papa said, "maybe you just thought she was scared."
"No, I didn't, Papa," I said. "It happened again up at the store one day. Grandpa shot a chicken hawk. When the gun went off, it scared her half to death. No, she's gun-shy, all right."
"Oh, well," Papa said, "that doesn't mean anything. A lot of dogs are afraid of guns."
"I know," I said, "but you wouldn't think she would be that way. I believe if I had a gun of my own, I could break her of being gun-shy."
Papa looked at me. He said, "What your mother says, you won't be getting a gun for some time yet."
"Yes, I know," I said.
When we reached the store, we saw the team was already hitched to the buggy and was standing in front of the store. Grandpa had loaded the tent and several boxes of groceries. I had never seen him in such high spirits. He slapped Papa on the back, saying, "I'm sure glad you could go with us. It'll do you good to get out once in a while." Papa laughed and said, "It looked like I had to go or have everyone in the family mad at me."
Looking in the buggy, I saw my axe.
I didn't think I ever wanted to see it again, but for some reason it didn't look like I thought it would. There was no blood on it, and it looked harmless enough, laying there all clean and bright. Grandpa saw me looking at it. He came over.
"I kept it a few days," he said, "just in case the marshal wanted to ask some questions. Everything seems to be all right now, and we may need a good axe on this hunt."
Grandpa sensed how I felt about the axe. He waited in silence for my answer. The excitement of the hunt was so strong in me, even the sight of the axe brought back only a fleeting remembrance of Reuben's accident. I said, "Yes, we will need one. Besides, it's a good one, and there's no use in throwing it away."
Grandpa laughed, reached over, and screwed my cap around on my head, saying, "That's the boy. That's what I wanted you to say. Now, you better go to the barn and get some hay and make a bed and a buggy box for your dogs."
"Oh, Grandpa," I said, "they can walk. They don't ever get tired. Besides, they're used to walking."
"Walk!" Grandpa almost shouted. "They're not gonna walk. No, sir, not if I can help it. You want them to be footsore when we get there?"
Papa chuckled and said, "We can't win a gold cup with two sore-footed hounds, can we?"
"Of course not," Grandpa said. "Now you go and get that hay, like I said."
As I turned to go to the barn, I couldn't help but smile. It made me feel good to have my Papa and Grandpa so concerned about my dogs. I had taken only a few steps when Grandpa said,
"Oh, wait a minute."
I stopped and turned around. Walking up to me and glancing toward the house as he did, he whispered, "In that empty kraut barrel in the harness room, there's a jug of corn liquor. Cover it up in the hay so your grandma won't see it, and bring it back with you." With a twinkle in his eye, he said, "You never can tell when we'll need some medicine." I knew my father wouldn't drink any of the liquor, but if Grandpa wanted to take along a whole barrel, it was all right with me. Just when I thought we were ready to leave, Grandma came bustling out. Grandpa got nervous. He whispered and asked, "Did you hide the jug good?" I nodded my head. Grandma handed Grandpa a pair of long-handled underwear and a scarf, saying, "I knew you'd forget something." Grandpa snorted, but knew there was no use arguing with her. She started picking around in the groceries, asking about salt, pepper, and matches. "Nanny, we've got everything," he said. "You must think I'm a baby and don't know how to pack a grub box."
"A baby?" Grandma snorted. "Why, you're worse than a baby. At least they have a little sense. You don't have any at all. An old codger like you out chasing a coon all over the hills."
At her biting remark, I thought Grandpa was going to blow up. He snorted like Daisy, our milk cow, when she had seen a booger. I crawled up in the buggy box with my dogs and hung my feet out. Grandma came over and asked me about warm clothes. I told her I had plenty. She kissed me goodbye, and we were on our way.
Over a dim, rocky road in a northeasterly direction, our buggy moved on. I noticed that the road stayed at the edge of the foothills, but always in sight of the river. About the middle of the afternoon, we stopped at a small stream to water the team. Papa asked Grandpa if he intended to go all the way to the campground before stopping.
"No," he said, "I figure to put up for the night when we reach Bluebird Creek. With a good early start in the morning, we can make the campgrounds in plenty of time to pitch our tent and set up camp."
Late that evening, we reached Bluebird Creek. We didn't set up our tent. With a tarp, we made a lean-to and built a large fire out in front of it. While Grandpa fed and watered the team, Papa and I carried our bedding to the shelter and made down our beds. Grandpa said,
"While we're cooking supper, you see to your dogs. Feed them and fix them a warm bed."
"I figure to cook them some cornmeal mush," I said. "That's what they're used to eating."
"Mush," Grandpa growled. "They're not going to have mush, not if I can help it."
He walked over to a grocery box, mumbling as he did,
"Mush, a hound can't hunt on a belly full of that stuff."
He came back and handed me two large cans of corned beef hash, saying,
"Here, reckon they'll eat this."
I wanted to hug my old Grandpa's neck. "Sure, Grandpa," I said, "they'll love that." Opening one of the cans, I dumped it out on a piece of bark in front of old Dan. He sniffed at it and refused to eat. I laughed, for I knew why. While I was opening the other can, Grandpa came over.
"What's the matter?" he asked. "Won't he eat it?"
"Sure, Grandpa," I said. "He'll eat, but not before little Ann gets her share."
With the second can opened, I fed her on another piece of bark. Both of them started eating at the same time. With an astonished look on his face, Grandpa exclaimed, "Well, I'll be darned. I never saw anything like that. Why, I never saw a hound that wouldn't eat. Did you train them to do that?" "No, Grandpa," I said. "They've always been that way. They won't take anything away from each other, and everything they do it as one." Papa had overheard our conversation. He said, "You think that's strange? You should have seen what I saw one day. One of the girls threw two cold biscuits out in the backyard to old Dan. He stood and looked at them for a bit. Then, picking both of them up in his mouth, he trotted around the house. I followed just to see what he was going to do. He walked up in front of the doghouse, laid them down, and growled. Not like he was mad. It was a strange kind of growl. Little Ann came out of the doghouse, and each of them ate a biscuit. Now, I saw this with my own eyes. Believe me, those dogs are close to each other, real close." After Papa had stopped talking, silence settled over the camp. Grandpa stood staring at my dogs. In a slow voice, as if he were picking his words, he said, "You know, I've always felt like there was something strange about those dogs. I don't know just what it is, and I can't exactly put my finger on it, yet I can feel it. Maybe it's just my imagination. I don't rightly know." Turning to my father, he said, "Did you ever notice the way they watch this boy? They see every move he makes." Papa said, "Yes, I've noticed a lot of things they have done. In fact, I could tell you a few that you would never believe, but right now, here's something you had better believe. Supper is ready." While I was helping myself to hot Dutch oven cornbread, fried potatoes, and fresh side meat, Grandpa poured the coffee. Instead of the two cups I expected to see, he set out three and filled them to the brim with the strong black liquid. I had never been allowed to drink coffee at home and didn't exactly know what to do. I glanced at Papa. He seemed too busy with his eating to pay any attention to me. Taking the bull by the horns, I reached over and ran my finger through the cup's handle. I held my breath as I walked over and sat down by a post-oak stump. Nothing was said. Grandpa and Papa paid no attention to what I did. My head swelled up as big as a No. 4 wash tub. I thought, I'm not only big enough to help Papa with the farm, now I'm big enough to drink coffee. With supper over and the dishes washed, Grandpa said, "Well, we had better turn in, as I want to get an early start in the morning." Long after Grandpa and Papa had fallen asleep, I lay thinking of the big hunt. My thoughts were interrupted when the wonders of nightlife began to stir in the silence around us. From a ridge on our right, a red fox started barking. He was curious, and in his small way challenging the intruders that had dared to stop in his wild domain. From far back in the flinty hills, the monotonous call of a hoot owl floated down in the silent night. It was the mating call, and was answered from a distant mountain. I could hear the stamping feet of our horses and the grinding, crunching noise made by their strong teeth as they ate the hard yellow kernels of corn in their feed boxes. A night hawk screamed as he winged his way through the starlit night. An eerie screech from a tree close by made shivers run up and down my spine. It was a screech owl. I didn't like to hear the small owl, for there was a superstition in the mountains concerning them. It was said that if you heard one owl, it meant nothing at all. But if you heard more than one, it meant bad luck. I lay and listened to the eerie twittering sound. It was coming from the left of our camp. The creepy noise stopped, and for several moments there was silence. When next I heard the cry, it was coming from the right. I sat up in alarm. Had I heard two owls? My movement had awakened Grandpa. In a sleepy voice, he asked,
"What's the matter? Can't you sleep? What are you sitting up like that for?"
"Grandpa, I heard two screech owls," I said.
Grunting and mumbling, he sat up. Rubbing the sleep from his eyes, he said, "You heard two screech owls. Why, that's nothing. I've heard two... Oh, I see. You're thinking of the bad luck superstition. Oh, there's nothing to that. Nothing at all. Now you lie down and go to sleep. Tomorrow's going to be a big day."
I tried hard to fall asleep, but couldn't. I couldn't get the owls out of my mind. Had I really heard, too? Were we going to have bad luck? Surely nothing bad could happen, not on such a wonderful hunt. I found peace in my mind by telling myself that the owl had changed trees. Yes, that was it. He had simply flown out of one tree to another. The next morning, while having breakfast, Grandpa started kidding me about the screech owls.
"I wish you could have caught one of those owls last night," he said. "We could have boiled him in our coffee pot. I've heard there's nothing like strong hoot owl coffee."
"It wasn't a hoot owl, Grandpa," I said. "It was a screech owl. I don't know for sure if I heard one or two. It could have been just one." Pointing to a small red oak, I said, "The first time I heard him, he was over there. The next time, it was over in that direction. Maybe he changed trees. I sure hope so." Grandpa saw I was bothered.
"You don't believe that hogwash superstition, do you? Bad luck? Pah, there's nothing to it."
Papa laughed and said,
"These mountains are full of that jinx stuff. If a man believed it all, he'd go crazy."
The encouraging words from Papa and Grandpa helped some, but there was still some doubt. It's hard for a young boy to completely forget things like that. Breakfast over, and our gear stowed back in the buggy, we left Bluebird Creek. On that day, Grandpa drove a little faster than he had on the previous one. I was glad of this, for I was anxious to reach the campground. About noon, he stopped the team. I heard him ask Papa,
"Is this Black Fox Hollow?"
"No," Papa said, "this is Waterfall. Black Fox is the next one over. Why?"
"Well," Grandpa said, "there's supposed to be a white flag in the mouth of Black Fox. That's where we leave the road. The camp is in the river bottoms."
By this time I was so excited, I stood up in the buggy box so I could get a better view.
"Maybe you ought to step him up a little, Grandpa," I said. "It's getting pretty late."
Papa joined in with his loud laughter.
"You just take it easy," he said. "We'll get there in plenty of time. Besides, these mares can't fly."
I saw the flag first.
"There it is, Grandpa," I shouted.
"Where?" he asked.
"Over there, see, tied on that grapevine."
As we left the main road, I heard Papa say,
"Boy, look at all those tracks. Sure has been a lot of traveling on this road." "That smoke over there must be coming from the camps," Grandpa said.
When we came inside of the camp, I couldn't believe what I saw. I stared in amazement. I had never seen so many people at one gathering. Tents were spread out over an acre and a half of ground, all colors, shapes, and sizes. There were odd-looking cars, buggies, wagons, and saddle horses. I heard Grandpa say almost in a whisper,
"I knew there would be a lot of people here, but I never expected so many."
I saw the astonished look on my father's face. Off to one side of the camp, under a large black gum tree, we set up our tent. I tied my dogs to the buggy and fixed a nice bed for them under it. After everything was taken care of, I asked if I could look around the camp.
"Sure," Grandpa said. "Go any place you want to go, only don't get in anyone's way."
I started walking through the large camp. Everyone was friendly. Once I heard a voice say,
"That's the boy who owns the two little red hounds. I've heard they're pretty good."
If my head had gotten any bigger, I know it would have burst. I walked on as straight as a canebrake cane. I looked at the hounds. They were tied in pairs here and there. I had seen many coon hounds, but none that could equal these. There were red bones, blue ticks, walkers, and bloodhounds. I marveled at their beauty. All were spotlessly clean, with slick and glossy coats. I saw the beautiful leather leashes and brass-studded collars. I thought of my dogs. They were tied with small cotton ropes and had collars made from old checkline leather. As I passed from one set of dogs to another, I couldn't help but wonder if I had a chance to win. I knew that in the veins of these hounds flowed the purest of breeded blood. No finer coon hounds could be found anywhere. They came from the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, the Bayou country of Louisiana, the Red River bottoms of Texas, and the flinty hills of the Ozarks. Walking back through the camp, I could feel the cold fingers of doubt squeezing my heart. One look at my dogs drove all doubt away. In the eyes of little Ann, it seemed I could read this message. "Don't worry. Just wait. We'll show them." That night, Grandpa said,
"Tomorrow they'll have a contest for the best-looking hound. Which one are you going to enter?"
I told him I didn't think I'd enter either one of my dogs. They were so little, I didn't think they had a chance.
Grandpa got all huffed up. He said, "It doesn't make any difference how little they are. They're coon hounds, aren't they?"
I asked him if he had seen any of the other hounds. He said,
"Yes, I've seen them all. Sure, they're big and good dogs, too, but it makes no difference. I don't care if your dogs are no bigger than a snuff can. They still have a chance. Now, which one are you going to enter?"
I couldn't decide. I said, "I'll think it over tonight and let you know tomorrow." The next morning, when I stepped outside the tent, I saw men everywhere. They were combing and brushing their dogs and getting them pruned for the beauty contest. Beautiful combs and brushes were used to brush expensive oils into their glossy hair. Going over to my dogs, I stood and looked at them. I started to untie old Dan, but taking a closer look at him, I could see he could never win a beauty contest. His face and ears were a mass of old scars caused from the many fights with tough old coons and bobcats. I held his head in my hands and felt sorry for him, but loved him that much more. I looked little Ann over and couldn't see any scars. I laughed, because I knew why. She was too smart to walk right up in the face of a fight. She would wait until old Dan took hold and then dart in. I untied her rope and walked her over to our tent. My father and grandfather were gone. No doubt they were over in some tent visiting old friends and making new ones. Looking around to find something I could use to groom my dog, I saw Grandpa's open suitcase. There, right on top, was the very thing I needed, his beautiful bone-handled hairbrush and his ivory comb. Picking them up, I turned them over and over in my hand. Little Ann stood looking at me. Impulsively, I reached down and raked her from shoulder to hip with the brush. She seemed to like it. I knew I shouldn't do it, but I decided to use them. Knowing I had no oils, I got some butter from our grocery box. With the homemade butter and Grandpa's hair set, I brushed her until she shone. All the time I was grooming her, she tried to lick the butter from my hands. The job completed, I stepped back and inspected her. I was surprised at the change. Her short red hair glistened, and every one was in perfect place. Shaking my finger at her, I said, "If you lay down and roll, I'll wear you out," although I knew I wouldn't. Hearing a lot of movement outside, I looked out. Men were setting their dogs on a long table which had been built in the center of the campground. Leading little Ann to it, I picked her up and set her on the table, too. I told her to act like a lady. She wagged her tail as though she understood. I untied the rope and stepped back. After the dogs were all lined up, the judging started. Four judges walked around and around the table, looking at them from all angles. When one of them would point at a hound, he was taken down and eliminated from the contest. Dog after dog was disqualified. Little Ann was still on the table. My eyes were wide, my throat dry, and my heart thumping. One judge stopped in front of Little Ann. My heart stopped, too. Reaching over, he patted her on the head. Turning to me, he asked, "Is this your dog?" I couldn't speak. I just nodded my head. He said, "She's a beautiful hound." He walked on down the line. My heart started beating again. There were eight dogs left. Little Ann was still holding her own. Then there were four. I was ready to cry. Two more were taken down. Little Ann and a big walker hound owned by a Mr. Kyle were the only ones left. The judges couldn't seem to make up their minds. Everyone started shouting, "Walk them! Walk them!" I didn't know what they meant. Mr. Kyle and I were told to go to one end of the table. Our dogs were placed at the other end. Mr. Kyle snapped his fingers and called to his dog. The big hound started walking toward his master. What a beautiful sight it was. He walked like a king. His body was stiff and straight, his head high in the air. His large muscles quivered and jerked under his glossy coat. But something went wrong. Just before he reached the end, he broke his stride, turned, and jumped down from the table. A low murmur ran through the crowd. It was my turn. Three times I tried to call to Little Ann. Words just wouldn't come out. My throat was too dry. The vocal cords refused to work. But I could snap my fingers. That was all I needed. She started toward me. I held my breath. There was silence all around me. As graceful as any queen, with her head high in the air and her long red tail arched in a perfect rainbow, my little dog walked down the table. With her warm gray eyes staring straight at me, on she came. Walking up to me, she laid her head on my shoulder. As I put my arms around her, the crowd exploded. During the commotion, I felt hands slapping me on the back and heard the word congratulations time after time. The head judge